Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 28th of July 2013. My name is T.R.P. Watson and this week I'm joined by Gareth James and Nick from Partially Obstructed View. We're now going to talk about Josephine and I at the Bush Theatre. This is Cuss Jumbo's one-woman show about Josephine Baker. Gareth, would you like to tell us more about this play and what you thought of it?
Well, before I went to see the play, because I hadn't read any reviews, I thought I was expecting a kind of straightforward biographical play about Josephine Baker. But it's actually a lot more than that, because she weaves a personal story, which may or may not be her personal story, i.e. Cuss Jumbo does, into the story of Josephine Baker. So it's kind of two stories being told together, and we really do switch very quickly from one to the other. And it's a one-woman show, so clearly she's playing both this modern actress and also Josephine Baker. So it's actually, I think, more ambitious and more complex and kind of more multi-layered, really, than I thought it was going to be. I mean, I was hugely impressed by it. I think that it is a touch self-indulgent. I think bringing in the personal story, and some of it is clearly autobiographical, if not all of it, I think does make it a little bit self-indulgent. But frankly, I would forgive that, because it is very, very cleverly done and very brave. And it's given a superb production by Phyllida Lloyd and Anthony Ward. Phyllida Lloyd as director and Anthony Ward as designer, no less. And they've given it a really sort of original, very inventive and very clever staging. By turning the Bush into a nightclub with table seating and then a bare stage, which they transform with a sort of swish of a curtain or a projection, really clever projections. And they sort of have props all over the place. So she just picks up a prop. And in picking up a prop, she then sort of launches into the sort of next episode of the story, really. And at the side of the stage, we have a pianist who plays both at the beginning and in between scenes, but also accompanies her on the few songs that actually contains. I think what shook me most about it was how much I learned about Josephine Baker by the end of 100 minutes. I mean, I did know a bit about her, and I'd visited her French home where she created this extraordinary kind of visitor space at the end of her life. But I really felt I learned a lot about Josephine Baker. And I do think, even, you know, notwithstanding the little self-indulgence, I do think that the weaving the two stories together did make it a lot better than just a straightforward biographical show. But above all else, I mean, I think the reason for going to see this is just a simply extraordinary performance by Cuss Jumbo, who, you know, whatever you think of Cuss Jumbo, the playwright, you cannot fail to be impressed by Cuss Jumbo, the performer. Because here she just, you know, it's very heart on sleeve, it's very passionate, very energetic. You know, she does sing and dance as well as act. And she just has this extraordinary ability to just kind of transform herself. You know, she can sort of put on a hat or put on, you know, just twist around and turn a face, put on some glasses and turn herself into someone else. And I just found it mesmerizing. I just couldn't take my eyes off her. So I think it's a good play, a great production, and a simply stunning virtuoso performance for me.
Yeah, it was sort of the one woman show to end all one woman shows. I mean, it's a very. I was surprisingly impressed. I didn't think I would be quite as much, and the only problem I had with it was the sort of the unpicking of the I character. You sort of think it's she's talking about herself to begin with, and then you start there's a certain revelation she makes, and you say, hold it, that's not right, and all that sort of thing goes wrong with the I character. And sometimes she'll jump back into things which are clearly autobiography, like the racist comments that are left after she was profiled in I think The Observer or The Independent, and one or two other things, and the slightly disturbing story about the person that of what an old actress said to her at the National Theatre, which was a bit strange. Nick, what did you think about it?
I would pretty much go with Gareth's comment about it being a good play, a great production, and a especially fantastic performance. And I agree, though, that I did think the stories you kind of wove in of I, who was not quite Cuss Jumbo, but clearly had a great deal in common with her. It was possibly the weakest link. I think particularly, I don't think it ever really succeeded in making me feel like she was making these connections very clear between what it was like to be a black performer, black female performer in those days and these days. I mean, she's obviously, it's obvious that it's still not the easiest position to be in. But I'm not sure she. I don't think she kind of. If she was trying to say that nothing's changed, I don't think she. You know, there's something there. I'm not. I don't think she was convincing it there, so I'm not sure exactly what parallel she was trying to draw. Because I don't think that. I don't know that it was entirely self-indulgent to do so. I think it was an interesting attempt. I think that's the part of it really that doesn't. It's just the part of it that doesn't really work. I think certainly all the stuff that focuses specifically on Josephine Baker is just fantastic, and that is, I mean, that's you can really see that there is a labor of love there. You can really believe that there's nothing particularly made up about the thing of having been a fan of hers since childhood and having been kind of fascinated by sort of the golden age of Hollywood and suddenly realizing there was someone who had the same skin color as her right in the middle of all these people and not being not being in the background but being the star of her films. So I can believe that there is a real labor of love there, and certainly in the way she recreates her, I think that's this is a woman who's been trying since childhood to dance like that and to kind of emulate the very particular performance style. So yeah, I think it's excellent. I think it is certainly helped by having such a stellar creative team. I mean, I made a lot of snide comments about the fact that 6 months ago, obviously, there was the change of submissions policy at the Bush that was supposed to help find new playwrights. And obviously, you know, it's too early to see what that's actually going to do. But I did find it funny that the season that got immediately announced had plays by her, Cush Jumbo and Rory Kinnear announced, who clearly, you know, new playwrights, but not exactly ones who've not got any contacts in the industry. But I mean, on the evidence of the first one, it is there on merit, not just on contacts. But certainly, you know, I don't think that a playwright who hadn't worked as an actor with Phyllida Lloyd and Anthony Ward would have necessarily got them as her creative team. I think it's a bonus, but I think that it wouldn't have been quite as good with that. And I think that I felt like there was a lot of tightening going on. I think if it didn't feel self-indulgent in the way that kind of self-written monologues often do, I think the having someone quite experienced to kind of rein her in and focus things probably helped with that. But I think it's certainly on its own merits, it is a very good piece. But I think the production it gets and obviously the performance it gets raises it into something particularly special.
I wonder whether if the eye had been entirely autobiographical and not the possibility of this sort of this fictional person as well, it might actually not have been better. Because I think, you know, telling the story of her having a doll that she turned into, a Tiny Tears doll she turned into a Josephine Baker doll, and the parallel of the racism, I mean, all of that really worked for me. But it's when she goes off into sort of talking about her partner and what's happening in their life that I think it loses its focus, really. And I wonder whether if she just stuck and talked about Josephine Baker's life and her life and the link between them, it actually might have been a better play. But, you know, that notwithstanding, and I agree with you about the Bush. I was just as cynical about the sort of the quote new end quote playwrights. But this does fit the Bush in this configuration absolutely like a glove. In fact, I really wish they just leave this configuration and can we have everything like this in the Bush, because it's really very comfortable, good sight lines done in this way, really.
I think where the sort of eye storyline, ironically, where it kind of went a bit weird for me was, I think I agree with you that it might have been better to be purely autobiographical. I think where it got a bit strange for me was when it had got into this thing where it had stopped, where you kind of went, okay, this is no longer purely autobiographical. Yeah. And then suddenly she brought in that quote, which she very specifically said, you know, well, she said, this is genuine. And she said, I mean, you could actually place it, because she said it was for a show I did at the Donmar. And you went, oh, you know, this, you know, last year, is that what? This was when she was playing, you know, female Mark Antony. So it very specifically made it Cush Jumbo again, after it had kind of gone off into being this not quite Cush Jumbo character. And that's when I kind of went, yeah, this isn't really working. I either want you to be, you know, either this is autobiography or it's a story. And at this point, it's kind of, it's blurred far too much.
I think that, I mean, actually, I think it's as simple as taking out the storyline about the big job. I'm trying not to spoil it here. The storyline about the big job and the big event in the life of her and her partner. If you just took those two bits out, I think the rest is probably autobiographical and therefore would work better with the Josephine story.
We're now going to talk about Gabriel at the Globe Theatre. This is a piece by Samuel Adamson which features the talents of the trumpeter Alison Bolson. Nick, can you tell me more about this play and what you thought?
Yeah, well, it's a very odd piece. It had a strange, well, not strange, but an untypical origin for a piece of theatre, which is that Alison Bolson, the trumpeter, wanted to play at the Globe. And instead of kind of setting up some kind of musical evening, which I'm sure they must do occasionally there because it's, you know, good kind of venue for that, Dominic Drumgoole actually got Samuel Adamson to write a play around her and around the trumpet. So it's had a kind of peculiar origin point, and I think as a result it's hard to say exactly what this is at the end of it. It's a series of kind of playlets, little scenes set around the time of William and Mary, particularly Mary, because it turns out William wasn't a big fan of music, but Mary much more so. It's kind of setting up the world that Purcell was writing music in and kind of the background to him, but some of the scenes are more specifically, you never actually see Purcell arrive as a character. His music is a major character in the play, and kind of his popularity is a regular topic of discussion. But you do get people very close to him. You get the company of musicians and actors and singers who first performed The Fairy Queen and landed this very critically loved piece that cost a fortune and lost them a lot of money. So you get a lot of these kind of little comic vignettes. You get some of them go for a bit more of a serious turn. I think it's got largely the cast who are currently in The Tempest at the Globe. It's sort of led by Richard Riddell, a trumpeter who is actually a very kind of reserved character who likes to let his trumpet do the speaking. So he kind of is the guide around that world and kind of sits back and lets it all come to life for you. So you've got kind of one regular character throughout it. But there's lots of bits of it that are quite good and quite entertaining. And I mean, it's generally very well acted. As a whole, it just, I was never sure what it was. I don't think it is sure what it is, and it never really quite comes together. And I think tonally, it kind of goes, it goes very broad in the first act, and then it lurches to trying to be more serious and darker in the second act. And I think it never quite gets its balance right. It's certainly better than certain new plays at the Globe, but it's still kind of a bit of an odd one that didn't quite work for me.
Gareth, what did you think?
Yeah, I'm very much of the same mind, really. I mean, I think that the crux of the issue for me is that it is a vanity project for Alison Bolson, and therefore, you know, you can see the artifice. You can see that it was put together for that very reason. And some of Samuel Adamson's playlists work extremely well and are very funny, and some of them just don't, and there are just too many of them. You know, if he could cut half an hour of this play and cut out the little playlists that don't work, I think it would be much, much, much better. The ones that work best are the sort of funny, bawdy ones for me. There's a lovely sort of scene involving the watermen, who are sort of characterised as the black cab drivers of their day, really. There's also a nice little satire on opera audiences, which as an opera goer is still true to this day. And I think it's at its best when it's doing the sort of funny and the satirical stuff, really. But as Nick says, when it gets into the dark and more serious stuff, it just doesn't work, really. I mean, musically, it's very good, although sometimes the music in the background does mean you have to strain to hear some of the words, or certainly the night I went. I thought it was beautifully staged. I mean, they have taken up a lot of the groundling space with sort of, you know, because the stage has kind of sprouted three sort of oval wings, really. But I love the way they brought the upper tier and the second tier together by a stairway, which I thought was very effective. So, I mean, there was a lot about it I liked. You know, I did like the design, I did like the music, and I did like some of the playlists. But the crux of the issue is that it's just too long, the parts of it that don't work, and some judicious editing, I think, would do it the world of good. But it's, you know, it's something different on the Globe stage. The Globe is one of the bravest and most ambitious places we have. I mean, the day I went to see this, they just announced their 2-year Hamlet tour to every single country in the world. So this, in comparison with that, was hardly as brave. So I admire them for having a go, really. But I do think you have to be careful when you sort of create something for someone. Because I think that, you know, that rarely works, really. And, you know, I'm sure Alison Balsam is a terrific trumpeter, but boy, she can't act. And, you know, when she is trying to do that, I mean, it really is very disappointing. So I'm glad I went. It's worth a visit, but it just doesn't stick together as a cohesive whole for me, really. So I'm very much of the same mind.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as-yet-unnamed London Theatre podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.